Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias Duncan, what's up, man? A.K.A. Nespias Duncan.
Oh, boy.
Shout out to Dakota Schmidt. That was great stuff. For those who don't know, Nikias is coming to us live from Sin City. Yes, he did get another suite. No, he didn't. He didn't travel correctly again. I don't know what they did. Did they not know you were coming? Was the red carpet not rolled out? Who do I need to talk to? Do I need to send a DM? Like, what do we need to do here, bud?
This is a lot. There is no suite. I am sorting through some travel stuff at the moment, since apparently there are no direct flights to where the Aces and Sun will be playing in games 3 and 4, or 4 if necessary. But
where the, you mean Connecticut?
Yes, but
is this not just massive any... Connecticut slander.
It's
to
not
start the pod.
It's not Connecticut slander at all. It's just where the Sun play in particular. It's got a little work to do to get into the. That's all.
I'm going to peel the curtain back. I told you to book this flight to Connecticut literally about 5-6 days ago. You declined to listen to me. It's fine. Anyways, Nikias, live from Sin City, did ask Chelsea Gray about the Aces spacing. And she said, nah, fam. Ask me later. So let's give it up. The hashtag is big rent free.
Can we not do this? We ain't gotta do that either. I am having basketball fun here in Vegas. The game one atmosphere was electric. A sold out arena, not just sold out, but an actual crowd record in terms of attendance at this game, which is how you're supposed to show up for a finals game. It's how you're supposed to show up, period. But you definitely have to do it being for the finals. The game itself was a battle. A 3-point win for the Las Vegas Aces to take a 1-0 series lead. And both teams kind of felt good and also annoyed with how they played in that game one. The Aces talked about how their shots weren't falling. The Sun also talked about how their shots weren't falling. The Sun were like, hey, we were able to kind of bring the Aces into the mud a little bit. And the Aces obviously feel good because we got brought into the mud and we won anyway. We won ugly. It's not how we want to do it, but we were able to do so. So, Steve, I will kick this off by asking you, like, whose confidence level in terms of their execution should be higher heading into this game, too?
Well, that's the fun of the series. And again, salute to Las Vegas for showing up and showing out. Great basketball city. Put some respect on their names. But this is a fun basketball series. These are two teams, two different ways to win. Only one of them is going to come out. I think you get the feeling the Aces know if they can get the fight here, if we can get the game right here, the Sun can't necessarily hang with us. And I feel like the Sun know, hey, if we can just keep it over here, we've got a shot. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a tennis match of sorts in that way. And it felt like every time one team found something, the other tried to counter. And just going off the blueprint, I think the Aces have to feel good about their chances with the way Chelsea Gray is playing, with the way Asia Wilson is playing, with the different defenses they found, and the potential for their guards to play better. On the flip side, the Sun have the size advantage. They have the paint advantage. They found something defensively. So now, once again, they are in a series where if we can just hit on the margins a little bit better, mm-hmm. we can make this a dogfight. If we make this a dogfight, it's anyone's ballgame. So as far as the confidence level goes, I would say they're both probably looking and saying we could have done a lot better.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I think that was the general sentiment for both teams kind of heading out. Was obviously there live to watch the game one, was able to rewatch it earlier today, which helped. I got to see a little bit of everything as opposed to where I was sitting. I would say, honestly, I probably feel a little bit better if I'm Connecticut, like slightly, because I think a lot was masked by the hot start that the Aces had. Like the first two quarters of the game really stood out to me. Like the Aces jump out to a 21-9 lead in the first quarter. Asia Wilson's losing her mind. You got a Chelsea Gray and one on a jumper. You got Jackie Young doing things. And I was watching it live. I was like, you know what? The Sun are putting two on the ball, which is interesting to me. They're not deviating from who they are defensively. The Aces are playing out of that. They're getting stops. They're gang rebounding, which is what they need to do against a team that has this kind of size advantage. And they were able to push it early. And so on my rewatching, getting to see everything, I did not like the Aces half court process for most of that first quarter.
Ah, if only, if only, if only someone had been talking to you about this all season long.
Can't imagine who you're discussing. They may just be talking. But no, I just did not like most of their process in the first quarter. Matter of fact, very first possession of the game, they run some action to get into a ball screen. Two to the ball. You have Aja slipping out, but she's rolling to the side that Kia Stokes is in. The Sun are able to navigate that and kind of switch both of their bigs to get Jonquil on Aja. Aja flips in this tough shot off the glass for the first bucket. The crowd is electric because, of course, they are. Aja was given the MVP trophy before the game, so they're buzzing. Aja hits the tough shot to get things going. Everyone's hyped, and I'm just like, huh, that's a nice shot, but also, what is this? And you go through the first few possessions of this game for the Aces, and it's a lot of Aja and Kia Stokes kind of being in the way. There was a point through in the first quarter where the Aces sprinkled in a inverted pick and roll. We had Chelsea Gray screening for Aja, and Jackie Young is one pass away there. So DJ Carrington is just kind of in the way. And there were just enough little things where I was like, okay, this might not be great. Like, they still have to nail this stuff. The shot making is carrying them right now. And then we get to the second quarter, in which the Connecticut Sun basically keep doing what they're doing. They're able to force turnovers. The shot making stops for the Aces. And now you have a 21-9 advantage in the second quarter for the Connecticut Sun. It was like, oh no, this is not where you want to be if you're in Vegas. And I don't know, like, they did get better in the second half, but I just find myself in a weird place with how Vegas played. Like, there's low hanging fruit, but as you said, you've been talking about the Aces half court offense all year long. I've been talking about the spacing, particularly in this playoff run, with how they are able to generate good looks in the half court with their starting unit right now. And it doesn't seem like they have firm answers yet on how they want to navigate that.
I'm a little surprised with your takeaway, because the Aces came out like gangbusters, and I thought their flow and tempo was really good to start. I thought they had a mindset to push, get up and down the court, play with pace. Mm-hmm. I think Kelsey Plum has a dribble handoff with Jackie Young. She lets it fly early. They're seeing two on the ball. They're making the plays out of that. To your point, the shot making did stop, but I also thought Connecticut's defense dug in a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was more impressed with what Connecticut was doing defensively than walking away saying, hey, the Aces aren't doing X, Y, or Z. Like, it felt like the Sun made a concerted effort to just switch things up defensively, kind of as it went on a little bit. I'm sure we'll touch on it. So that's where I was like, okay, mm-hmm. if Connecticut can do this, now we've got a different game. But if the Aces can get up and down, mm-hmm. now we've got a different game. I think that the tricky part is going to be Connecticut has different personnel. They have more guards they feel comfortable guarding. The Aces' top players, the Aces' guards, they feel like they have the size against Aja. So some of the automatics you had in the Storm series aren't the same. And you're trying to develop your game plan and your flow as the Sun are kind of throwing you little different looks to keep you off a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And that's the adjustment. And that's where, for me, I lean towards the Aces a little bit. Just because, like, the Sun had that game and they played well, but you got to win that game. Mm-hmm. Especially this time of year, you got to win that game because you've shown your hand to a degree, and you need to take advantage of catching the Aces off rhythm, catching them off guard, throwing different coverages at them. So that's where it's kind of like, again, both teams could probably look and be like, nah, we should have had that one, or we'll get them next time.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point. Just overall, like, I don't mean to discount what Connecticut did, because they were great defensively. Like, Alyssa Thomas she was one of the best defenders in basketball all year long, but she had a masterclass performance on both ends of the floor. And again, defensively, she was dictating a lot with her hedges, with the switching, with her help defense. And I think that's why I kind of look at the Aces like, okay, this is the personnel you're going to be facing. They're already really good. So don't make it easier for them in any way. Like, we should be talking about, in an ideal world anyway, we should be talking about, wow, what a great play, not, wait, why is person X spaced here? Why is person Y rolling here? Why is guard B doing this? And make it easier for an already elite defense. So that's kind of where my mind goes.
No, I get that. I totally understand that. And of course, you love the process, so I get it. I think it's funny, though. We joked about it on the preview pod. And to me, I go back to guard play. You know, kind of ties into me how the Aces played. And I'm kind of hitting on both sides here. But I imagine if you're a coach on either side, you're looking at the box score, probably blink a couple times. And you know there's some food that you left on the table. Like, well, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, Raquana Williams, they went 7 for 28. And Dwana Bonner, Coney Williams, and Heidman went 6 for 26. For me, whichever group can show up with the shot making, that's probably going to move the needle. Because we know what the Sun have bigs-wise, offensive rebounding-wise. We know the Aces have Chelsea Gray and Asia Wilson. Who else is going to add to the package?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I like the aggression on both sides. But tying back to the Aces half court, I think the challenge is going to be for the Aces guards. And I think it's going to be if the Sun can keep mixing their coverages. Like, I think that was underrated. Because the Sun were hedging hard to start the game. Credit to you. And they used Jonquel Jones to pre-rotate to Asia Wilson. As it went on, late first quarter, second quarter, you saw a little bit more of a flat show. Big at the level, guard recovers.
Mm-hmm.
Started to throw a little bit more drop out there. That mixture is going to take away the automatic reads. It's going to take the rhythm. And that's going to be key. Because you can also still mix in some switching. And mm-hmm. I thought one thing that Connecticut, and not just Alyssa Thomas, but as a team did as the game went on, okay, we're going to come to the level. We're going to make you think we're hedging. We're going to back off. And our guard's going to recover over the top. And those possessions were the interesting ones because the Aces knew, okay, you guys are putting two on the ball, great. Let's run this to exploit that. Except when they ran that, the big was already back with the roller and the guard was already in front. So you can see literally plays where they're, okay, we're going to exploit this, take the trap, throw it ahead, hit Asia rolling, except there's no trap. Now what do we do? And that's the key for Connecticut to me. If they're able to keep mixing in coverages, they're able to fake the hedge, you're going to make the Aces guard start thinking about what's about to happen instead of being aggressive like they were in the first quarter. So that to me was huge. And that's double why, to your point, the shot making is important. And that's why Chelsea Gray's run has been super important. Mm-hmm. Because you talk about the half court offense, she's erased a whole lot of those plays where I would be memeing you to death with the half court offense. And it just didn't matter.
It's funny because you would be memeing me and then you would be like, oh, wow, Chelsea Gray. And then here I am like, wait, what the heck did the Aces just run on this session? So I feel like I've kind of taken that on almost regardless of the shot making at certain points. But no, that's a good point on Connecticut's defense. I think with them making the Aces guards think like that affected the tempo that the Aces wanted to play with. And I think that puts even more of an emphasis for them to, they have to get into their step quickly. Even if they do have an inkling of what Connecticut's trying to do scheme-wise and they switch that up on them. If they're starting their sets with 18 or 17 on the clock as opposed to 14 or 13, that gives them time to kind of sort through, okay, they fake the funk here. Let's get to something else. Let's keep the thing. Let's keep the ball moving. Let's keep our tempo up. And again, you saw that particularly in the second quarter where their flow was just gone. It was just done. Connecticut did a great job. There were also just some weird turnovers from the Aces that were self-inflicted. Like there was the one with Chelsea Gray walking the ball up. She's communicating with, I think, Kia Stokes. It was either her or Jackie Young. But she's like calling for something in the left corner and she just throws a dart. And Kia Stokes was not, no Aces player was prepared for a pass. And it's just a pick six for the Sun. It's like, wait. You can't have those against a team like Connecticut. It is wild to me, again, the Aces won this game in a game that they didn't feel like they played well. The Sun had a 12-0 fast break point advantage in this game. Yet another playoff game for the Aces that they just did not score in transition. And so, again, it's impressive that they were able to pull it out anyway. But I also look at that number like, these are the things you kind of have to nail if you want to beat this team three times in a series.
Well, I mean, that's the tricky part. And I'm sure top of the list is let's not let the Aces get easy ones. Mm-hmm. Let's try and keep them in the half court. 12-0 still sounds wild. Like that. This is one of those games where you look at the box score, you look at some of the stats, and that in my eyes kind of go back and forth. Like, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but the Sun dominated the paint, but it never felt like it had the same impact that maybe what Stewart was doing in the Storm series, to where the Aces had to react. The Sun won the fast break battle, but it didn't feel like they were really getting it in transition a bunch. You know, the Aces offense felt kind of mud adjacent, but it didn't feel like 23 made field goals, 8 assists.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of, I'm trying to find the vibe there. And that's where it's an interesting series. I think this is one where each game is going to be its own deal.
It's going to be its own series, basically.
You're going to see the evolution of each team trying to do things, but the carryover, you're going to have to adjust on the fly to whatever works.
Yeah, and this, and we touched on this during the preview, but again, you don't find better coaching matchups than Becky Hammon and Kurt Miller. Like, these are two elite basketball minds. And so you're starting to feel, especially in a game that was in the mud, like game one was, you could feel pretty much every button pushed. And something that stood out to me very early on, particularly on the rewatch, again, so I could see everything. The Aces went with a lot of zone in game one. I wouldn't have been surprised by seeing some spot usage. I wasn't expecting like 5-40 marker to first. Hey, we're going zone against their starters. And you zone late, very late in the game when the Sun go with their three big lineup, the Aces go zone there as well. And so it was a lot of, the guards had to work. I think the guard play is definitely going to be important in terms of the shot creation. But for the Aces in particular, they've had to do a lot on the defensive end as well. Like, in order to gang rebound the way that they did and to keep those bigs off the glass whenever they could, like, it took everyone. I think that second quarter ended up being a foul, but like watching Chelsea Gray try to box out Jonquel Jones and both of them basically end up out of bounds. It's a foul on Chelsea Gray. And I was like, man, this is going to be tough. And for Kelsey Plum to not be able to make, she made one shot in the game one, but she fought defensively. Crucial defensive rebounds, crucial deflections, at the edge of the zone, kind of digging down on bigs, being forced into switches and having to front and fight. Like, it was really impressive, but also just shows, like, the margin for error with the size difference is almost non-existent for the Aces.
But yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I think going back to your zone point, we talked about how much are they going to throw it out there. It was interesting to see the evolution, because it felt like the Sun were able to kind of find some things early against the zone. Hey, let's dive a big. Now you got to deal with that matchup. You try and scream that out. We got another big. Just little things like that. But it did feel, as the game drew on, especially in the second half, the Aces had more quality possessions in that zone. There was more activity. There was more of a fight on the post-ups. There was more of a, we're not going to let you just catch it when you flash to the elbow. And that's going to be the battle for me when they go zone. Are you giving the Sun something to laser in on, which is going to help them? Because Lord knows, when the Sun have a purpose, they look different. When they just kind of basketball woo it out there, you never know what you're going to get. Or is this actually going to be able to bog them down more to where, hey, we can't throw in the post, we can't throw the elbow. Now what do we do? Are the Sun going to be able to move the ball and find open shots? I mean, if you go with the super big lineup, you got 2-3 people who can set screens. Can you distort the Aces zone that way? And now maybe you get some driving kick out of that. Mm-hmm. That little mini battle is going to be fun, because the Aces need to have the zone in their back pocket. And I like that they used it, but it never felt like they had to use it. It felt like a choice. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is always the important thing when it comes to zone. There's nothing wrong if it's saving your day, but if it only saves your day, it's not necessarily a long-term fix. Mm-hmm. Where if they can use it like this in conjunction with the rest of their defense, it gives you another curveball in case the Sun get rolling. You can kind of slow them down a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of going to the NBA side. It's kind of like the Charlotte Hornet quarterly, basically. Like, hey, it's cool that you can do this and throw different things out there, but if you have to go to it this much and it's getting blasted, you don't have counters behind it, it's kind of a problem. Actually, while we're on the Sun's offense, how did you feel about their process, their tempo?
I leave the process to you, man.
Yep.
That's your bag. It wasn't as bad as it could be. I thought the paint presence obviously was big for them. I think it's key in this series. They have got to convert the easy ones. And that was an interesting dynamic as it drew on with Asia in the paint, roaming with Hamby, with her rim protection ability. It just felt like the Aces were able to bother some of those attempts that they had as the game wore on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things where the Suns' offense was in the mud. But that's not a big deal if you're getting rebounds. But that's going to give you more of an opportunity. But it still just feels like they just left some meat on the bone. They left some food on the table. Like, I just had some possessions where I was like, why? Why are you doing this? Like, early, I forget, I think it was first quarter, I want to say, Bree Jones screens for Courtney Williams. The Aces give the switch, which puts Kelsey Plum on Jones. That equals a Courtney Williams pull-up. And later in the game, the Aces don't switch pick and roll. I think Hamby was in a drop. Courtney Williams has a wide open pull up. That equals a pass to Alyssa Thomas crashing the glass. Third quarter, you got Jackie Young on Alyssa Thomas. You got Kelsey Plum on Jonquel Jones. You can't get the ball in the post. Like, they have to take the next step to win this series, to turn that paint dominance, that paint pressure into a real pressure point that the Aces are really reacting to. Not just giving the effort to deny, not just giving the effort to front and take the pass away, but really, oh, we're in trouble. And if they can't do that, and they can't miss on the margins, that's their advantage. That's going to be the thing that's going to open things up for them to win this. So, I give the Aces credit. Second half, they were battling. You know, you talked about Plum's activity. I thought the whole team was very active. They really just fought to try and make the Sun think twice about throwing it in there.
They did battle. Just the reference, I guess, just to bounce off of that, like, one of the funnier moments of the postgame presser was first Coach Hammond talking about how she basically lit into the team at halftime to a degree that she even surprised herself by. And people asked, like, what was the issue? It's like, well, we came into the game saying, hey, we have to control the paint, we have to control the glass, we have to control the tempo. And we had no fast break points, and the Sun ate us up on the offensive glass, and they ate in the paint. And then so she finishes up, and the players come in, and one of the reporters there asks, like, hey, we talked to Coach Hammond about halftime. And before even finishing the question, all three of their faces just like, oh, yeah, she did. And Chelsea Gray gave you the meme where it's like, yeah, we, your children are watching, we can't repeat what she said to us. But whatever it was definitely lit a fire under all of them, and it kind of helped boost the effort that they showed in that second half. The Sun couldn't get much going in that second half. As far as from the process standpoint for the Sun, like, I wasn't super mad at it. It felt like they were starting to find counters to what the Aces were trying to do. One thing that stood out to me earlier, I was like, wait, the Aces are really intentional about trying to keep these empty corner ball screens on the sideline. And the Suns started to poke at that. And they started with, like, basic pick and pops with Jonquel Jones, just kind of stressing out whoever's guarding her. And then there were just different actions they were running to kind of have the Aces moving before flowing into them. I was like, okay, I can see the gears turning here. That's nice. You already hit on it with the zone. Like, the Aces went to the zone, and first position the Aces went to it, the Sun were able to get a pretty easy bucket. It was like, huh, this is decisive. This is good. You recognize what was going on, and you got there. So, like, I didn't feel like it was a bad process game for them overall. Low-hanging fruit, Jonquel Jones's first shot attempt came with, like, 9:20 left in the second. Like, that's typically not what you want to see. That dichotomy is always going to be interesting in Connecticut. Like, how do you use Jonquel? How do you get her shots? Like, how do you use her size offensively, aside from the offensive rebounding? Because her first bucket came off of an offensive board. So, like, how do you design post-ups? Or how do you get her going? The Aces did a pretty decent job of defending the cross screens. So, again, they deserve credit for that as well. But I do think the Sun are going to have to find some real fruit for her as an interior presence, as opposed to, hey, get it off the glass, or we're just going to space you out because we need to open up the floor for everyone else. But I do want to see, like, how that progresses in this series.
I will say the one thing I did like about the Suns, I like the usage of Jonquel off the ball. just a good way to kind of keep the Aces on their toes, have her come off some screens, force you to think in a different scenario. Do you want to switch this? Oh, wait, we switched Jonquil onto who? How do we handle that? But yeah, the balance is going to be, you know, how do you get those seals for her? You know, we talked about needing to get her the ball in the post, but it's going to take some work to get the ball to her in the post in this series, especially if Age is going to be working like that. So they've got to find different ways to loosen them up. But process-wise, I thought there was more attempts from the Sun to do things. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I talked about Connecticut's defensive versatility, I thought the Aces showed a little bit. And that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because we did see different things from the Aces on defense. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about the Jonquil pops. That's one thing they were not trying to give up early.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we'll go drop. We'll go late switch. If Jonquil pops, we're going to rotate someone over.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Connecticut kind of carved up the Rupaire pick and roll when she was doing flat shows. But you saw Aja switch. You saw Aja hedge out. You saw the zone. Do you feel like the Aces had one thing they were comfortable with? Or do you think their versatility is going to be an advantage this series?
I think they definitely shown some comfort with the zone. Because, again, you mentioned the early rips and how Connecticut looked solid against that and then how it progressed from there. And so with that, I was impressed with the Aces sticking with it. It wasn't just, okay, they got good looks the first two, three times, let's get out of it, because Becky Hammon and the Aces have done that in the regular season where it's like, hey, here's the look, didn't work. All right, fine, we're going to something else. And that really stood out during that late June, early July stretch where they had the 2-5 skid. And we talked about it on the pod, like defensive versatility is good, but if you're just doing a bunch of different coverages because you're trying to find something that works, you're in trouble. And so it definitely didn't give that feel in game one. I do think the versatility is going to be key, because for a Connecticut Sun team that one just has built-in advantages, you have to show some kind of help. You have to throw off the timing and give yourself a chance. And also, this is a team that can kind of get in its own way sometimes. So if you can help push that forward by throwing in different looks and connect and executing in those different looks, like, that's going to put you in a good position as well. So, like, I was pretty impressed with the Aces defense. Like, I had more questions about the offense than the defense.
Makes sense. Makes sense. How did you like the Connecticut big lineup?
Like, definitely get the theory behind it. I was surprised we didn't see more of it. Like, that was kind of my thing. Like, just heading in, like, how much of a factor was that going to be? And by proxy of that, how would the Aces match up with that? Would they go with a three big lineup kind of like they did during their regular season series? And they didn't. Someone on this podcast said, I don't think they're going to match it. And sure enough, the Sun go with their big three lineup in the fourth quarter and the Aces just stick with their guns. I was like, okay. And they fought and they battled and they were able to keep that advantage. I am curious to see like how that goes forward in game two, especially if the Sun are able to have more success with that lineup. But I was just impressed with how the Aces dealt with it. I don't think they got bad mileage out of it, but it certainly wasn't as effective as I thought it would have been, considering that the Aces didn't match the lineup.
I always like Connecticut's big lineup. Just, hey, get your best players out there. Let's figure it out. I think one of my favorite parts was in the fourth quarter, Becky saw that big lineup and just started yelling 23 at the top of her lungs so they could go zone. That was funny to me. But the key is, what are you going to do? And if those minutes just equal zone, are you getting the most out of it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought the most interesting part was that did put Alyssa Thomas on Chelsea Gray, which I thought was fun. Now, the question is, I don't know. I think the lineup had that happen. Like, I thought that was a byproduct of going with the big lineup more than anything. But what I did like with AT on Gray is, again, it allowed the Sun to mix things up. Like, they were still aggressive sometimes in that pick and roll when it's Chelsea and Asia. But there was also a drop in there with Alyssa Thomas fighting over the top and staying in front. And I think that's just another way for the Sun to try and keep the Aces off balance. So it'll be fun to see. I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
How'd you feel about the Chelsea Gray, Asia Wilson pick and roll? And I only asked that because it was a code breaker in the Storm series.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Chelsea Gray was just not missing and cooperating. Asia Wilson was not far behind. But it never felt like the Storm were uber comfortable with what they wanted to do at all times. Mm-hmm. And just those moments where they weren't comfortable, you could really just carve them up. You could kind of see, like, this is kind of a different vibe at times, because Alyssa Thomas is very good at hedging. Mm-hmm. Also very good at recovery and timing. And it kind of blends in those quick shows where now you just don't have anything out of it. Does that mix interest to you? Any concern? Or is the answer still, it doesn't matter? Because I had this down in my notes and I updated my notes with, it doesn't matter.
I mean, that's where the shot makers come in. I think before answering the question, like, that's probably my favorite mini battle of this series. Chelsea Gray is a human computer, and then you have the shot making. Alyssa Thomas, in addition to being a ridiculous hedge defender, again, she, at worst, she's the second best hedge defender behind Candace. And if you have Alyssa Thomas number one hat tip to you, I have no complaints about it. So she's just that good. But watching her bait the hedge or bait a full-blown trap, like, that's just, they're two incredibly smart players that love to catch the opposition off guard. So, like, that's just going to be a fun battle to watch for me. As far as the age of Chelsea pick and roll, I think I am still mostly okay with it, because I think while the Sun did different things, like, the default is to have AT at the level or higher, whether she's defending Chelsea and fighting over, or if she's just the big defender. And so in theory, like, you're still occupying two defenders. And Asia was able to get some good stuff off the slips. And that's where I go back to, you know, top of the segment. Okay, what is the spacing like here, particularly in the half court? Where is Kia Stokes going to be standing? And even a little bit later in the fourth, when De'Erica Canby came in, and not enough can be said about how important she was during the stretch when she finally came in the second half. But we'll get into that. But even when she's in, like, okay, where is De'Erica Canby spaced? And if she is spaced just on the three-point line or whatever, okay, what is she doing? Is she just spaced? Is she screening for someone? Is there some movement in tandem with the pick and roll? Like, the other stuff is where my eyes go in terms of the Asia-Chelsea pick and roll. Because ultimately, like we saw in the second quarter, where I think Alyssa Thomas was involved and Chelsea Gray drains a pull-up three right in that small little gap where Alyssa Thomas kind of coming back off the edge. Like, Chelsea can just do that. And if Asia's involved, she's slipping and popping into mid-range jumpers. Like, she can just do that. Or even if it is just a tough and she has to ISO, like, she can just score. I'm more concerned with, where's everyone else? Like, how are you complementing this pick and roll?
It's interesting you point your concern to that. But again, I go back with, it's hard to manipulate it if you don't know what's coming. Mm-hmm. So I go back to a play in the fourth. You have Kelsey Plum in the left corner. You have Chelsea Gray, Asia Wilson pick and roll. You have Asia rolling towards that side. This is all set up how you want it. The Sun hedged and trapped that, and you didn't get anything out of it. So, especially because sometimes they go to it on the flow. So it's kind of, can they get it designed? Can they get it out of the flow? Will Connecticut cooperate in that way? I wanted to see how you felt about it, because it's one of the more fun things to watch. How do we figure this out with both of them playing at this level and with what Connecticut has defensively? But that's what I want to see, because fourth quarter time, if we imagine this to be a tight series, that's going to be what they have to deal with. And that's what's going to be what the Aces are going to have to score out of. Are you going to get the same success ratio you did against Seattle? Or is this going to be, you know, some challenging stretch where you need the shot making?
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely leaned towards the latter in the game one. So I do think moving forward, they're going to want to generate some easier stuff. Because those late possessions, very late in the fourth, like, this game could have went to overtime if Dwana Bonner hits the three to close out the game, mostly because we got, a shot clock violation. We also just got a very bad late clock look for Chelsea. Like, it got a little dicey. And if that's if your bread and butter is going to be Asia, Chelsea, these are two players that have been lighting the world on fire. Like, if the Sun are able to not just slow them down, but, like, dictate terms with what they want to do, like, that's a huge factor in the series.
How good was Asia Wilson defensively?
Oh, my goodness. That's why she won Defensive Player of the Year. She, like, let me get box score stats. She got a bunch of defensive rebounds, two steals, four blocks. But good Lord, did she have to do a lot. She had to do a ton as a helper. She had to front sometimes. She had to hedge sometimes. I will say, on the quick hedge, if I can go slightly negative real quick, end of the first quarter, end of the second quarter, I should say. No, end of the first quarter. The bucket ended up not counting. It is an Odyssey Sims, Alyssa Thomas pick and roll. Kelsey Plum ducks under. Asia shows high, like 28 feet from the basket. Alyssa Thomas is able to slip in because she basically seals Kelsey Plum as she's ducking under. And it's a mismatch. And then it's a feed to Breonna Jones. Again, the bucket came like half a second late, so it didn't count. But I'm just like, wait, why are we doing that? Is that impromptu? Is that design? Just throw off the last second play, whatever. Overall, though, Asia was insane. Her effort did not wane that entire game. Between having to deal with Alyssa Thomas, had to deal with Jonquel Jones, both on pops, when trying to post up. To do all of that and then also have to be that much of a presence on the glass against bigger players, particularly when the Sun went to that three big lineup, Asia deserves her flowers for the game she played in game one defensively.
Nah, she was all over the place. I was going to ask, because the Aces did go ahead and take this one in winning time, as some folks like to say. But you said something that intrigued me about the Aces having to work hard. Now, it's interesting. This is a Sun team that we usually, you know, we say it over and over again, kind of find their way in the mud. Are you concerned at all about how hard the Aces are having to work defensively, or is this the activity you want and need to see from them?
I think I lean more towards the latter, especially defensively. Like, I lean more towards the latter. And, like, this is something that Asia has talked about throughout the season. And I go back to the late June, early July skid where they went 2-5. And she basically said, like, no, like, this starts on defense. As she and the rest of the team have been saying, like, our offense flows the best when we're able to get stops and get out of run. And if we aren't able to get stops, then we're going to be in trouble. And so for them, like, they have to fight this hard defensively, one, just to serve their base. But two, they're facing a Connecticut team that's just a whole lot bigger than them. And you can't afford to have any sort of effort lapse or mixed box out or anything like that, because you're just going to get punished if you do. Like, it's impressive to be like the Sun only won the rebounding battle by 5 in this game. And the difference is a little bit bigger in terms of offense boards. I think the Sun had 13 to Vegas at 6. So you felt the gap a little bit wider there. But even then, most of those offensive rebounds I felt came in the first half of that game, particularly in that second quarter when they were able to really dictate terms. So I think that effort level that we saw from the Aces, and Asia spearheaded a lot of that, that just kind of has to be the standard. And that's the standard that they want.
I feel it. How good is De'Aaron Hamby?
Very good. I'm just, what a stretch for her to come in basically cold. Like, it, I meant to tweet it during the game, during halftime, because I ended up getting the staff passes out, the box score sheets and whatnot. And I was like, wait a minute. It just dawned on me that we just have not seen De'Aaron Hamby in this game yet.
Did you just do a flex just out of nowhere?
Does that count as a flex? Like, they give the media.
They were just handing me box scores and whatnot. I was too busy to tweet that out, but I thought about it. You know, I had this box score I had to get real quick, but it was in my head. I was going to tell y'all.
Wow. I did not think that was going to be taken that way. I'm going to be honest. That is not how I meant it. At any rate,
The hashtag is big box score. Don't worry about it.
Here we go. I'm not doing this with you. At any rate, I was like, huh, she hasn't played. And we get into the third quarter, and De'Aaron Hamby's just brought in cold, like, hey, we need a stretch. And her mobility defensively, she executed multiple schemes while she was out there. Key on the glass, key just keeping things moving in the half court. Like, I think that's kind of the underrated difference between her and Kia Stokes in the half court. Just because, like, neither of them are going to be defended as shooters when they're on the perimeter. But if the ball swings to Kia Stokes, it's going to be a handoff. It's going to take a little bit of time. With De'Aaron, it's more of a snap and go. She's comfortable driving the basketball. And even if it's not a drive for her, or even if it's just an assist opportunity from there, she keeps things going, and it allows the Aces to flow into something else. Like, just that jolt of energy I felt was important for them. But she just came up huge.
No, she had a great stretch, and I thought it was good for her, important for her to have that kind of run to where you remember, oh, yeah, De'Aaron Hamby is really good. And she, as you stated, did a lot of things the Aces needed during that stretch of the game, checked off a lot of boxes, moving the ball, dribble handoffs to keep the flow going when the possessions broke down, screening on and off the ball, You know, I think there was a possession. They ran beer action and Hamby had her back to the ball for like 7 seconds looking to find someone to hit. Just little things like that. And then I thought defensively the impact was huge. You know, not just the rebounding, not just the switching, but just the weak side help. The timing. Knowing, okay, I'm guarding Alyssa Thomas. I'm going to stay back in the paint. Oh, it's a pick and roll. Now I'm going to come back to the level. I'm not going to overcommit. I thought she just played her role extremely well. And I like that she was able to do it in a burst. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, go out there, be yourself, give us some life, and now we move forward. So I thought it was key for her, and it helped the Aces lineup versatility, and it helped them overall. They needed that juice.
Mm-hmm. They did need that juice. And on the Hamby front, do you expect her role to just be those? What does that mean?
About to ask me for the 9th time this playoffs if De'Eric and Hamby should start. I'm going to give you the same answer.
That wasn't even the exact wording on the question.
I'm sorry.
Can't even get into what I want to get into. I wasn't going to ask if she should start. Like, I don't think you go from 10, 11 minutes to you're going to play 30. I don't think you get that. I guess my question more so is that, do we see the minutes go up to like 20 or so? Do we see longer stretches or more frequent stretches? Because again, she just popped in the third. Like, do you think we get like 2, 3, or 4 minute stretches in the first quarter and second quarter?
I think she definitely gets a first half run, but I don't know if they get extended any further. Again, if she's going to do what she does, it's probably going to come more in a burst right now than sustained. You don't want to put her out there too long or anything like that. So I probably think she'll get a first half run, get a second half run, then play from there, depending on how it's going.
Okay. While we're on the bench bigs, you referenced early on the Ileana Rupaire minutes defensively and her being at the level and those results not being great. Like, how long of a release do you think she has?
One stint. And her stint may be replaced by De'Erica getting a first half stint. Honestly, I think they were hoping, okay, repair size, hold her own, give some spacing. Defense did not hold up. So I don't know if she'll get a second run at it just because of the magnitude. And if the Sun ID'd the tape, depends. Depends on if you want to keep Hamby fresh, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. You have to say something?
No.
Ah, my apologies then. On the Sun side, one thing stood to me, like a lot of utility of Breonna Jones as a mid-range shooter in this one. A little bit more pops from her in the game one than I would have anticipated. Is that just a counter against what the Aces were doing scheme-wise? Do you think the Sun look at that like, hey, we need to get you more inside and really use your advantage there? Because 12 points, I think only one rebound for her in this game. Did you have any issue with how she was used?
No, I think it's a good counter. I mean, you don't want it to just be post-ups. You mix those in. So now those post-ups, in theory, have a little more impact because you feel like, oh, she has it going. You really need to pay attention. But I think her ability to just hit you with the short roll, hit you with the little mid-range jump shot has always been good for the Sun, especially as they sometimes lack flow. That can be a little bit of a connector. So I didn't have any issue with it. I'd like to see how the Sun find more focus with their post-ups going forward and see if you can work to get some deeper seals, see if you can work to manipulate some spacing to open things up for you there. Because if you're just going to dribble down and try and look in, I think the Aces are working a little too hard for that right this second.
Okay. While we're on the Sun, just to go to the last possession for them, just because I couldn't really gauge what the idea was behind the last possession. It was a play ran for DeWanna Bonner. And I couldn't tell if she was supposed to come off a stagger or if this was supposed to be an elevator and she took a different path or what, but the play was immediately blown up. I guess just basically like, what did you see on that one? I want to make sure I'm not tripping. That's how I was going through that possession.
Now, what did you see?
For me, like it looked more like DeWanna took a path that the screeners just weren't ready for. Because none of the screens hit. And like she took the outside route, got the catch, and it was just nothing. It ends up in the leaning three for DeWanna that didn't really have a chance of making or going in.
I think it was miscommunication with the bigs. Either I think it was the bigs. Because the play was basically, well, it's zippered, you loop Courtney Williams over, and now it's two screens for Bonner. She's looping around. But they're coming together. Like, they're supposed to kind of, like, I wouldn't say it's supposed to be elevator just because of the route she was taking. It may have been supposed to be, like, staggers, or maybe they were supposed to set them lower to give her more room. The problem was they didn't get a hit. So you didn't really do either of the things that you needed to do. So if it's going to, like, I think I, for me, just with the angle and the body language, I can't say if it was drawn up as an elevator screen, but the way Alyssa Thomas was looking, it wasn't supposed to be, I don't think. So I don't know if they were supposed to come together and she was to fly off both to the wing, or if it was supposed to be like a stagger, but you just didn't get a hit. Someone had to get a hit on anyone, especially with the Aces defending it the way they did. Hammy's already pointing for the switch, but she was also able to recover. Yeah. But that's not supposed to happen.
Right.
And I think with Asia, and I believe it was Stokes out there, right? You've got to be able to hit one of them and cause confusion on those kind of movement plays. If it's a scenario where you don't get a hit, it doesn't really matter what you drew up, because the defense is going to have the chance to recover or see it coming or bait it. I thought it was a good idea, but again, no hit, because Asia and Stokes were both on the inside. So if they could have got a piece of Hamby, they would have had something, but no dice.
Okay. Just wanted to get your expertise on that one, good sir.
Send the invoice later.
Send. I got you. Oh, I'm allowed to send you things now. Okay. I didn't know that was on the.
Oh, you can send those all day.
Okay. Duly noted. Okay. Well, before we wrap up on game one thoughts, what matchup or scheme thing or adjustment or lineup change, what's something that you were keying in on heading into game two?
I'm keying in on the guard play. Which guards improve or show up quicker? Do they stay aggressive? I am keying in on the Suns' defense. Do they continue to mix their coverages up? Do they continue to try and keep the Aces off balance that way? I am keying in on the Aces' offensive tempo. Do they take what they learned from game one and try to open things up in the half court? That's going to be the battle for me. Because, again, this is the Aces team that scored 25, then 9, 21, then 12. The Suns scored sub 20 in 3 out of 4 quarters. That's going to be their game. The Aces can kind of figure out enough ways to generate quality shots as opposed to just making quality shots. I think this series takes a big turn. The Suns kind of have to keep it in one scenario. Not one scenario. That seems disrespectful.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
They do got to kind of keep it in one arena to get the maximized effect.
Okay. And I would say for me, like, I'm in with the Aces half court, like, okay, where is Hamby or Stokes spaced and how are they being used when they're not directly involved in the screens? I want to see how the guards bounce back on both sides. And for the Sun, just Dewana Bonner and Courtney Williams in particular, just what is their effectiveness going to be offensively? The Sun are a different team when those two are going. They need the shot making from those two. It's telling that the Sun were able to dictate the tempo, dictate the paint in that fashion. And they lose by 3 mostly because Courtney Williams and Dewana Bonner just couldn't make shots. And so I will be keyed in on those two things. Quick stat, in playoff wins this season, Dewana Bonner averaging about 16 points a game, Courtney Williams averaging 10. And in the playoff losses, Dewana Bonner averaging 8 points and Courtney Williams averaging 7. It's a drastic dip in effectiveness, and it pretty much directly translates into how successful the Sun are. So I want to see what the bounce back is going to be like for those two. And now we do have a couple of questions about the game.
A couple of questions from where?
From the Dunker Spot mailbag. If you have questions for us at any time, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Send them in. We will get to them.
We is used very loosely here. I don't have the password. So.
It could be we if someone, you know what, it's fine. We're on episode like 87 of you not wanting the password, I guess, I suppose. Anyway, we'll start with, Jack with something that we didn't really address in our analysis. In game one, the Sun went 3 of 5 from the free throw line and the Aces went 16 of 19. Watching the game, I felt like the Sun were way more physical, but obviously they didn't get the calls. Do you see that continuing for the rest of the series?
continuing, I mean, I don't know if it'll continue at that rate. I think it's a little bit different because the Aces have the defenders to contest, and the Sun had the size to not necessarily always draw the foul on the first rip. So it'll be interesting to see if that does flip, and that could have an impact. Mm-hmm. And you know, I go back to the Sky Liberty series where I was like, hey, what if the Sky just start running really hard and get into the foul line? What's that look like? Mm-hmm. Like, if the Sun are able to sustain some of this with just free throw attempts as opposed to we miss contested layups, does that change the math? What does foul trouble look like? So I don't think that will continue. I think the Aces' ability to get in the paint is important. I think Connecticut's ability to keep them out of the paint is important. I think the Aces have the ability to maybe draw more fouls just with the drives they have from the perimeter. So I don't think it'll be this extreme, but I think both teams need to balance it out with foul attempts.
Okay. I think aside from the assist thing, again, a season low 8 assists for the Aces in this game. The second most surprising stat on the box score for me was the free throw disparity. And that's something that I didn't even see until after the game. It's like, wait a minute. I didn't know the Aces took that many. And it didn't feel like the Sun took that amount either. And in watching the game live, it didn't feel like there were a whole bunch of, holy crap, Dewana Bonner got hacked, Alyssa Thomas got hacked, Jonquil got hacked, and the refs, what are you doing, type sequences. So I didn't – 5 still seems low. I do think there were some opportunities for and ones, but there wasn't anything egregious enough to where I'm just like, wait, why is this happening? So I would expect the gap to probably close. And see, that's a really good point about the drives in particular and how the Aces are able to draw free throws in that way. Because I do think Natisha Hyman and Courtney Williams in particular, they're more so, they're 2-level scorers from the mid-range and 3. So they're not going to influence that. So the free throws may just be from the offensive rebounds. And if the refs are going to allow the players to be physical battling for boards, then you may not get the 18, 20, 22 free throw attempt game from the Sun. Not that they aren't getting hacked. I mean, not hacked, but not that they're not dealing with contact. But like, if the threshold for physicality is going to be a little bit higher in the series, that may explain why the Sun aren't living at the line. And so maybe there's a middle ground to be found, but like, I didn't find game one to be anything egregious, if that makes sense.
Sure does, man.
All right. We have a positive 2-pack coming from Rob. The first question, can the Sun do anything to stop Chelsea Gray, or is she inevitable?
I mean, she seems inevitable. I mean, the shot over Alyssa Thomas was insane, but she's made insane shot after insane shot after insane shot to the point where you're going to lose track of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I almost forgot she had the one where they zoomed in and the hand was literally all like fingertip away from the ball. It was still cash. So that it does feel like she's inevitable at this point in time. Now, I guess the hope, if you're a Sun fan, is maybe we can just get her to be incredible scorer instead of incredible scorer and playmaker. But even that is going to be difficult because she's such a good passer. So you just got to do your best, contest, and hope for the best. Like, that's the only recipe I have when a scorer is playing at this type of level.
All right. And the second question was, which role player needs to step up the most for their team to win this series?
Define role player.
I guess if we are delegating the star status to Jonquil and Alyssa for Connecticut, and I guess Asia, Chelsea, Kelsey for the Aces, then I guess that leaves everyone else.
Raquana Williams needs to swing a game for the Aces.
Okay.
What say you, sir?
Okay. Raquana, like, I want to say I'm still keeping an eye on the Dejanay Carrington minutes. But I think if we're going role play, like, I'm glad you asked, like, what defined role player at the start. Because, like, it doesn't feel right to call Dewana Bonner a role player.
But I think she's like too good. 4 episodes ago.
It was a list of players. Anyway, we're not going through that again. But at any rate, I think Dewana's going to drive a bunch of it because I think her lift defensively can help Like, I think if there's going to be any cross-matching in game two before getting to the we want to list on Chelsea thing, like, I think Dejuan is going to be a prime candidate for that. So that may be important. And again, the shot making, not just self-created, but her ability to shoot off of screens. Like, she's kind of, she is their movement scorer in that way, or movement shooter in that way. So I think she would probably get my vote in this regard.
Okay, I feel it.
All right, and moving off the W very briefly, this one comes from Mike. He says, hi, Nikaiz and Steve. You've talked about streaming 2K on Twitch before, but have you considered playing Football Manager as well? Would love to see Nikaiz try to rebuild United. I have been, multiple people have told me to play Football Manager. And I have seen very little, like, screenshots here, there, and stuff. I know that I would vibe with Football Manager. As a huge fan of NFL head coach to this day, I know I would absolutely lose my mind playing Football Manager. And that is why I have not played Football Manager. I have entirely too much. We have gone from NBA regular season to NBA playoffs plus W regular season to W regular season to final/summer league to W playoffs. And we're going to go from W playoffs to the NBA season starting back up with probably some Eurobasket mixed in, if we can sprinkle it in. So, like, I'd know if, and 2K just came out, FIFA's coming out next month. If I put in Football Manager, my effectiveness is going to decline somewhere. And I just don't know if I have, I don't know if I have the bandwidth to do it right now. Steve, are you interested in playing Football Manager?
Interested, yes. Too much process for me.
Too much process?
It's a little too much.
How's it too much process for you?
Just, you know, if I'm going to play, let me play.
All right, I'll let you have it. We want to go into some free throws to close things out.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Let's get into it. I have two for you.
What you got?
One, I guess we'll start not fun first. One, why did Anthony Edwards do that?
I have no idea. He shouldn't have done that. Don't do that. It's 2022. We got to grow up. That's not the way to do it. It's not the way to speak about people. It's not funny. It's not cool. We're all human beings. And we need to treat each other better. And that's like, that's what were you going for anyways? Like, number one. Number two, why tap them with that word? Like, that's just, that's not what we're about. It's not what we should be doing. You know, for every joke you think you're getting off, there's a kid or an adult that's been trying to figure this whole thing out their whole life by themselves. So no, not down with that at all.
It's not cool. It was unnecessary. He did post an apology for it. I hope that the apology is genuine. And more importantly, I hope that there is work to be done and that this has grown from and that he's better moving forward. It was just disappointing to see. And it deserved to be called out. And again, I'm glad he apologized. And from there, like, I hope work is done for him to learn from and improve that behavior. And we should just leave it. We should just go from there.
Live and learn, but let's be better.
There we go. Second question for you. It was opening weekend for the NFL. I know that you are in, what is it, 8 different fantasy football leagues at this point. how is the weekend? How are your teams?
I don't like the judgmental nature. I don't like the way you just judge that. Like, I don't like how you said that. I love fantasy football.
There we go. There's nothing wrong with that.
The one that matters, we're feeling good. Got a W.
The one that matters.
I mean, the one that really, really matters. Like, I'll actually be upset about.
Wow.
Not that they don't matter, but, you know.
I see.
Everyone's got that one league that's like, I can't. This is the one. Mm-hmm. Patty Mahomes, what's up? Shout out to you, Tyreek Hill. Thanks for making him big man. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Rex Burkhead, I need you to relax, bro. Kind of messing up my Pierce. Oh, wait, hold on. So DK Metcalf just not going to catch touchdowns now? Hey, bro. Hey, man. Shout out to Gabe Davis, but. My sleeper running backs did well. My little bench. I got Pacheco. I got Khalil Herbert. I got Daryl Henderson Jr.
Feeling good. Feeling great.
I missed out on James Robinson and Michael Carter. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, Sorry to hear that. My only football commentary beyond that is one, AJ Brown is just freaking incredible. Best receiver. Steve has taken off the headset as I'm. That's amazing. AJ Brown is freaking incredible. Best receiver Philly's had since. Do I want to? You know what? I think he's better than Deshaun. Deshaun's fun, but no. Best receiver we've had since T.O. I am very excited to see what the Hurts Brown partnership is going to be like. Also, get Stanford all the way out of here. We're going back to Saturday. Just get Stanford out of here. That's all I have on football.
Wait.
Williams is the one, man. I'm sorry. I've seen enough.
Okay, look, bud.
Go ahead.
You got 12 days to enjoy this. I hope you know this.
Uh-huh.
This little USC thing you got going down.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even like to say it like this.
Mm-hmm. What?
But you're probably going to lose in Corvallis this year.
Okay.
The Beavers are going to take you out. All right. I feel gross saying that out loud.
Well, we will save the date. We'll save this clip. We'll either start the podcast with this comment with you gloating and I'm just going to be sighing all over the place, or I will be a happy camper. Like, hey, remember when you said this? So we will see.
No, you'll be reprieved. I'm not gloating over an Oregon State win.
Oh, boy. I'll let you have it. Do you have free throws for us, sir?
Yeah, quick question while we're on football. Bigger sleeper, the Carolina Panthers or the Washington Commanders?
Oh, God. Oh, boy. I would probably say the Commanders, begrudgingly.
Okay.
That defense, though. Yeah.
2K thoughts? How's Mr. AVO doing?
Oh, Mr. AVO. We are in the starting lineup now. We finished that quest. The rotation has been fixed. If I get up to 38 minutes per game, I'll actually get to influence the rotation. But until then, Coach Nate McMillan, or virtual Nate McMillan, is doing the right thing. Trae Young and DeJounte Murray are now starting together. Not sure why that wasn't the case earlier in the season. Even virtual Nate McMillan is giving me grief. It's okay though.
Why is virtual Nate McMillan catching a stray? It's not even training camp as he was starting. Leave that man alone.
Because virtual Nate McMillan was starting Bogdan Bogdanovich at the two instead of DeJounte. It was DeJounte and Bogdan starting with Trae Young coming off the bench. I'm just like, why is that? He's literally the best player on the team. Why is he coming off the bench? Like, it's cool that there's a bench unit with me and Trae Young, but, like, that should be a staggered thing, not him just coming off the – how did you give me Big Mad over a 2K rotation? How did you do this? How did you manage to do this?
You got to run the offense, right?
We've been podding way too long. Anyway, beyond that, though, I've enjoyed 2K this year. Like, the shooting is a little bit of an adjustment this year. It's an adjustment for me this year just because I've had to learn a whole new jumper since they have new like height requirements and stuff for different jumper bases and stuff. So that's been kind of fun to get in the flow of. But like the gameplay feels good this year. We will see if that lasts. The first real patch always kind of throws things out of whack when people complain about whatever they don't like. So we'll see. But as of right now, giving it a thumbs up, have yet to explore the other game modes yet. So Jordan Challenge coming soon, my NBA coming soon.
Okay. I'm excited to tackle the eras. I've played a couple games. I've enjoyed myself. Found myself really unstoppable with Trendon Wofford.
That sounds about right.
If for some reason, it give me a bench unit. I know you make fun of me playing all five together.
You're playing all five. Of course you do.
They have more energy. Your starters are tired. We go on a little 6-0 run. You love to see it. I'm having Gary Payton 2 is my hack with the Blazers.
You using him as a pick and roll ball handler and screener?
I'm using him all over the place. I thought, oh, he's going to be my 4. But no, he ended up being my backup 1. And it worked. Talk about it later. How did you land your jump shot on Oscar Robertson, by the way? You've never seen him play.
Is this what we're going with right now? No, he's just one of the upper releases that I have. I like the flick. Okay. The aesthetic is cool.
Okay. All right. Per Jason Anderson of the Sacramento Bee, the Sacramento Kings still have not finalized the signings of Quinn Cook and KZ Akpala. Both are still expected to be in Sacramento when training camp begins, according to a leaked source. But this is a fluid time for roster decisions and things could change. Can I have the 10 minutes of that podcast back?
No. In fact, we're going to do another 10 minutes on the absurdity of KZ Akpala not having a guaranteed contract on the Sacramento Kings yet. They need the wing defense. They need the zone counter. Get them back out there.
Okay. What's a funnier visual? Kawhi Leonard at New York Fashion Week or Kawhi Leonard at the U.S. Open?
Definitely Fashion Week for me. And I could just see like the stoic face. I'm just like, yo, what's happening?
Might fit it. Never mind.
All right.
So Danny Ainge observed that the Jazz didn't believe in each other when he got there. Was he just scrolling Twitter?
Yes. He might have also watched, but yes.
Where does FIBA Lauri Markkanen rank for you? Top five, top three?
Oh, God. He's been cooking. He has been cooked any way you want. They're running that man off of all kinds of screens. I've enjoyed FIBA Lauri. Again, I have not been able to dig fully into EuroBasket right now. I'm literally in Vegas covering the series, but like, from what I've seen, the shot making has been insane. He top five FIBA Lauri.
I was watching EuroBasket this weekend, and they had the refs mic'd up as they were going through a review process.
Oh.
Is this something you would like to see in the NBA?
I don't think I would be, because like we already get the announcement of the call from the refs. Like I'd be interested in hearing them talk through it.
No thanks.
Why no thanks?
I can deal with decisions that make me think. But if I hear the logic that led you there, I just know too much. I need plausible deniability.
You know,
also give some, we gotta give refs credit, man. Like, that's gotta be tough because you make a mistake and then you fix a mistake. But the way that you fix the mistake makes it sound 10 times worse than the mistake you made. And like, we just need to give them one, like, hey, we messed up, our bad. Mm-hmm. Per game. Just one. No questions asked. Just we fixed it.
Are you calling for more reviews?
No, I'm calling for more take fouls. Oh.
All right.
Is Nick Young okay?
Probably not. Gonna be honest. I don't know what I watched when I saw the short clip that I did of him in the ring. One, I barely recognized him. But then beyond that, like the form just wasn't there. There was no oomph behind the, it just looked like he put some gloves on and went to hit someone versus boxing. And it showed by the end result. So kind of a tough scene for old Swaggy P.
How much, what gave you more joy? USC winning or the Eagles winning?
More joy, definitely USC winning.
Oh my gosh. What do you said mean? Becky Hammon and Lincoln Riley in a calendar year. God has truly smiled on me.
Pretty true. Hey man, it's nice to see points being put on the board in both sports. The Aces are shooting threes. USC's just spreading them out. Caleb Williams just throw. Oh, but Caleb Williams is so freaking good, dog. He's so good. He have Jordan Addison and Mario Williams on the house. Oh, what an offense. The defense is giving me some, stressing me out. So we'll see how the defense progresses.
Why'd they do that to Vicky Johnson?
No, you know what? See, we can circle back to 2K. To answer your question, first and foremost, I don't know why that was the thing, bro. It can't be that hard to get the scans in for everyone. It can't be. Like, pick a home stand for each team and be like, hey, we doing this today. Get everyone in. It shouldn't be this difficult. And to circle back to how much I'm enjoying 2K, again, the gameplay I've had fun with. My ritual, as always, when a 2K drops, I got to go to the ratings. And not just the ratings. I need to look at the individual ratings and see what's happening and see just what kind of work went in. And boy, did I find myself annoyed. If you thought the NBA ratings had me annoyed, the WNBA ratings were somehow worse. Not even somehow, because Okay. At any rate, the ratings were bad. Do you want to hear some perimeter defense ratings on the W side very quickly?
Go ahead, man.
Diana Taurasi at 82.
Ah, so that's why you're mad. Okay.
Wait, no. It gets better. Diana Taurasi at 82. Breonna Stewart at 79. Rebecca Gardner at 79. Gabby Williams at 75. Liz Cambage at 74. Shakira Austin at 64. Izzy Harrison at 52. I just do not live in a basketball world in which Diana Taurasi is a better defender than Breonna Stewart, Rebecca Gardner, Gabby Williams, and Liz Cambage is just a better space defender than Shakira Austin and Izzy Harrison. That's just not how that works.
I mean, sometimes all you need to do is be better at defending yourself.
Are you proud of that? You shouldn't be proud of that. Much like 2K shouldn't be proud of these ratings.
The funny part is that was just supposed to end the pod and you got mad. That was tremendous content. I thought you were going to say, thanks for listening to another episode of the Dunker Spots. So I'll go with my alternative line. So was Stephen A. right about the Raiders and the Chargers?
Oh God. Yeah, let's end it right there. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Bye, guys.